Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club.
Good afternoon. Great to see everyone here. A lot of familiar faces and a lot of new faces as well. Welcome to the Commonwealth Club, our World Affairs program. I'm Raj Mathai with NBC Bay Area News. We're gathering today to discuss the state of this great city of San Francisco, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there is optimism here. So if you're thinking it's all going to be negative, that's not the case this afternoon. Also, just kind of what the post-pandemic world is looking like here and how we are revitalizing San Francisco with one of the great civic leaders in this town, Larry Bear. We'll talk a little bit baseball, too. Maybe even last night's Dodgers game down at Dodger Stadium. And before we bring Larry on stage, I'd like to start with a short video about San Francisco.
There's a certain inexplicable magic that happens way out here in this cauldron by the bay, along these cliffs at the edge of the continent. An alchemy unlike any other anywhere else on Earth. A perfect collision of conditions, raw habitat, and rare humanity.
We'll build a new San Francisco!
Where grit and guts meet brain power, optimism, and openness. A confluence that agitates into action a restless itch to create things that are brilliantly new and different. That launched railroads, electric streetcars, and television. Appointed prospectors to gold.
Gold in them die hill.
And put their denims on the map. A spark that lit the torches of great warriors, giants, and miners. That sent bicycles and skateboards careening down mountains. A Mustang GT flying down Filbert Street. A toy named Buzz soaring above suburbia. And the Millennium Falcon streaking through hyperspace. It birthed the beatniks and the summer of love. It built a modern-day pyramid and its neighboring tower. It compelled a few crazies to forge an Uber, an Apple, a Google, and countless other never-been-done-befores. Here is home to Nobel laureates, top neuroscientists, and the newest whiz kid on the block, artificial intelligence. Here in this cauldron by the bay is the very motherland of innovation. If it's uncharted and unheard of, if it provokes and upends, if it dances to the beat of a different bongo, if it knows where the future is headed and gets there first in ludicrous mode, if it's a force that can be felt in all four corners of the earth, if it changes everything in an instant, well, then the chances are it was dreamt up and built up here in San Francisco. It all starts here. And the best is yet to come.
I got some chills seeing that. Let's get to our guest now. Speaking of San Francisco, it's really one of the driving forces behind the city, not recently, not only recently, but also for the last several decades here. For more than a decade now, Larry Bear has led the Giants as CEO and president, and before that served in leadership roles for the organization for 20 years, playing a key role in so many initiatives, baseball and even not baseball related to this city, and negotiating the naming rights for the stadium, bringing Barry Bonds here many years ago. Born and raised in San Francisco, Larry's roots run deep. And away from baseball, in 2021, he helped launch what was named the co-chair of Advance SF, a coalition of San Francisco CEOs and business leaders committed to addressing community needs made more acute during the pandemic. Started that in 2021. Part of Advance SF's campaign includes that inspiring video we just saw. And with that said, let's bring out, and I'm not sure if he's bringing his three World Series rings with him. Let's bring out to the stage Larry Bear. Did you do that video? That was nice.
I think it was pretty wonderful. And hats off to, it wasn't me at all, it was Rich Silverstein of Goodby Silverstein. Some of you might know Rich. That's great to be here. This is, I go back far enough to when you were doing sports,
yeah,
Josh.
Yeah, we go back. Okay, so we're going to get some questions from the audience online. We have a big presence here getting some online questions. We'll talk about San Francisco, your role in it, but we'll talk a little baseball too. Can anyone beat the Dodgers?
Yeah, I'll tell you, they're a good team, but I think we are too. And we're, you know, it's interesting. It's not where you start, it's where you finish. And that sounds like a bit of a cliche. But we've seen that a lot in all the sports, right? Really, where especially baseball, where postseason can be, can be a little bit more random. It's hard in take the NBA for a number one to fall to a number eight in the playoffs. It happens, but not that often. In baseball, Arizona Diamondbacks went to the World Series last year, and they were a wild card. So we want to win games in April. Don't be mistaken. But I think that we've set it up this year where we have two of our real horses, pitchers coming back in season. So Alex Cobb coming back pretty soon, month or so. I don't want to give an exact timeline because we're not sure. Robbie Ray coming back around the All-Star break. And then Monday night, our latest acquisition, the Cy Young winner, Blake Snell. So it's an evolving team, and we feel like we'll be okay. Can I see a hands? Anybody coming to opening day? Oh, good.
There we go.
There we go. There we go. All right. And tickets still available.
Do you occasionally kind of put on the three rings and say, wow, those were great years? Because that happened really fast and every other year.
No, we're very grateful. I mean, I don't really put the rings on per se, but it's funny. When you're in this world, and Bruce Bochy used to talk about this, it's like every year's a new movie. And it's almost like you're making a movie. Like if you were a film director, you have this movie, it's out in the world, and then you're on to the next one. It's totally different. And I think in sports, there'll be a time to reflect, and you reflect a little bit. And I certainly reflect on the amazing support we've had from the fans. But each year, you just get ramped up to to attacking that year. So honestly, I think we're just always kind of living in the moment. Yeah, and you almost have to, because if you take any bit of this,
here
come the Dodgers, Diamondbacks in our division. We've got three other powerhouse teams. Dodgers are really, really good. So are the Diamondbacks. So are the Padres. And then who wants to go play the Rockies at Coors Field?
Okay, I was going to call you or text you a couple months ago. Were you guys really close to Shohei Ohtani getting him here? It was a full court press. Did you feel that it might happen, or was it just kind of going to?
I thought it was possible. I mean, the interesting thing is you take the number one free agent in his case, maybe generationally, the number one free agent ever. But you take like even the number one free agent in 2 years ago, Aaron Judge. We think that it's the right thing to do is take big swings at big opportunities, knowing the odds are not in your favor. In the case of Aaron Judge, he was a Yankee. He was going to be, potentially a lifetime Yankee. We didn't know. He was from the Central Valley outside Fresno. We had a shot, but was it better than 50% shot? Probably not. With Shohei, same kind of thing in that he was in Southern California, was comfortable in Southern California. And, were the odds stacked in our favor that he would come here? Probably not, but we took the swing. So, what I'm really proud of the way we've adjusted on that is that we've went and loaded up as opposed to one player that was going to be, this massive deal. We have large deals, but with six or seven players, and will the team be better as a result? We'll see. But we feel good that the work that was done in the offseason.
You're in a good spot. All right, more baseball later on.
Sure.
Let's get to some other issues here. How does a baseball guy have such a good pulse on the city of San Francisco and getting things done? How did that happen in your career?
Well, I think, we're all a product of our upbringing, right, and our background. And, went to public schools in San Francisco. And let's face it, we're all affected by the living conditions, whether you might live in a nice neighborhood or a neighborhood where, you don't have the issues. But frankly, San Francisco is a dense city. It's 49 square miles. So, and I think that's one of the things that I love about San Francisco is that you go neighborhood to neighborhood. It's a walking town. And it pains me when, we can't have, a city that is functioning optimally. right? And so tie that to, you know, those of us who work at the Giants. I mean, we're wearing San Francisco across our chest. We go out on the field every night, every day for 7 months. And we feel like we're representing San Francisco. And in some ways, it's a business, but I think the people that work at the Giants and those that are investors, having come together in 93 to help save the team, they almost view it as a quasi-public institution. I mean, it's not the opera, it's not the symphony, it's owned privately. It's not a nonprofit, although profits sometimes don't happen. It's not intentionally a not-for-profit. So if you add all that up, you really care a lot about the city. I mean, we all really care a lot about the city. Investors, employees, our fans that come to the games, we want them to be, you know, feel comfortable, feel safe. And even kind of beyond that, we're thinking, what else can we do to improve the city beyond sort of the core issues that we all know about, homelessness, safe streets? And so we're building this neighborhood Mission Rock, which I'm sure we'll talk about, to sort of present the front door, back door, however you want to look at, of our ballpark with a development that, you know, we'll be able to have a hand in. So I guess the answer of how to get involved is that I think that when you work for a professional sports team in a community, especially in baseball, where you have 162 games, 81 and plus postseason at home, you're in the middle of it and you want the city. You're a town booster.
At what point do you get disheartened or angry or accept that, oh, this is part of the truth, when you see the image of San Francisco now, not just around this country, but around the world, going through some of the negative headlines?
Yeah, it's been painful because in all of us at Advance SF, which is a group that's come together, it was an existing nonprofit called Committee on Jobs, that was founded back in the 35 years ago by Warren Hellman and some great San Francisco civic leaders, Charles Schwab, Don Fisher. It's morphed into Advance SF. And one of our three or so missions is to really attack that narrative. Because that narrative is, we think it's overblown. There are problems here. They need to be addressed. But all cities have problems. We feel strongly that the neighborhoods are thriving, and that's not being portrayed. It all starts here, the innovation economy. Look at AI. Look at the fact that San Francisco is the center of AI, of the AI, the burgeoning AI industry. We are, you know, disheartened by the fact that that's not being portrayed. And if you're traveling in New York, or you're traveling on the East Coast, or you're traveling internationally, and you hear people ask, oh no, what about San Francisco? I think it gets amplified by, some media that have agendas to, because San Francisco is viewed as a liberal city and it's viewed as a progressive city.
We'll call it out. It's a talking point for Fox News, whether you watch Fox or not. And that's a big platform.
It's a talking point for Fox News. And it's also been a talking point. You had a Republican candidate actually film a commercial from the Tenderloin.
Yeah.
In the Tenderloin.
Ron DeSantis, yeah.
So I think you've got a situation where it maybe fits some agendas. But walk around San Francisco and – yeah, there's some neighborhood issues. I mean, and there's certain parts of San Francisco that need to be attacked. I think it's marginally getting better, but the Tenderloin is obviously needs to, there's a multitude of issues. I don't pretend to be an expert, but we're calling out those issues and we're calling for action. The three areas that Advance SF is really focusing on is, one, getting people back to the core downtown. Okay, the employers, because it's really a group of businesses that are putting energy into it. So one is getting people back downtown, which we've got to have, because downtown is sort of the economic core, not just of San Francisco, but of the Bay Area, one. Two is the narrative, focusing on the narrative. And three is, retaining the middle class, which has a lot to do with housing and having more housing availability for, you know, up and down the spectrum, including workforce housing. So one of the real focuses in our project at Mission Rock has 40% affordable, of which most of it is the workforce, is teachers, public school teachers, let's say. We have to make it affordable for them to live in San Francisco. You know, nurses at the various hospitals, police, fire, we can't have them living 2-3 hours outside of the city each way because of the affordability issues. So really have to attack those issues, and that's what we're doing. But overall, I mean, the city of San Francisco is – it's a beautiful place, and I think it's on the upswing, recovering from the pandemic. Got probably hit harder by the pandemic than any city because of the technology.
So Advance SF, you say housing, that's workable, and there are projects. Just yesterday, I think something in the outer Sunset was done for teachers. The narrative, that will change over time, even sooner than later, perhaps. But return to work in the office, I'm not sure. How can Advance SF tell Mark Benioff or anyone else, say, bring your workers back in? Because I think that ship has sailed, that people come in maybe 3 times a week now.
Right.
How do you combat that?
And so I don't think we can. I don't think you can get the toothpaste back in the tube in terms of it saying, okay, we're just going to blink our eyes, or, you know, or mandate that you go back to pre-pandemic levels of the office. But there are other things you can do. Okay. And what are those other things? You can have employee gatherings on Thursday night or Friday night or Monday. You can have community, have the employees come together and do community work. You can create music, culture, art hubs downtown, which is happening. And employers are getting involved in that. And that's fine. One of the things, one of the initiatives the Giants are doing that we were talking about in the green room is City Connect Tuesdays. So every Tuesday home game, we have companies are signing up to be part of City Connect Tuesday, where the employees will come back, be in the office that day, and then have a employee outing to the ballpark. And we're talking about thousands of employees at some of the larger companies. So Salesforce is the sponsor of it, is our overall sponsor.
Are companies responding to this Tuesday?
Fantastic. We have, you know, half a dozen or so. We have Salesforce, Visa, Adobe, LinkedIn. So it's been really embraced. So those kinds of programs. So we aren't saying to Mark Benioff, who's a wonderful philanthropic San Franciscan, we're not saying, you know, it's not a guilt trip that, hey, why is it not 5 days a week? I think companies are coming back more, but, you know, companies have their rhythms and have their modes and their private companies. But here are some other options to get community engagement, because it's really about engagement and being part of the city. You know, and they're going to be, and some of the things will have to adjust. The city's going to have to adjust. So the, you know, the transit, one of the things that's interesting, say with Muni, is, you know, it's some of the routes, the more popular routes are the neighborhood routes, not just the commute back and forth. So if I live at, you know, 34th and Clement, and I want to go to a great restaurant on 4th and Clement, I take the bus up Clement Street, yeah. Right? It may not be going from Clement Street, you know, from 34th and Clement to Montgomery in California.
Sure. You took the bus to Giants games as a kid, if I recall.
I did.
Right?
I did. My dad on the Ballpark Express to see Willie patrol center field.
You've gotten things done in the city, 25 years ago, I believe now, is the ballpark. Time really flies there. China Basin was just kind of nothing. And it continues to be this whole new part of the city now with Mission Bay, your new projects there. What are you doing that others can't do? What's the magic secret sauce here?
I think, Raj, it's really interesting because you hear from people, you can't get anything done in San Francisco. It's impossible, you know, and you heard during the pandemic, you know, I'm frustrated with San Francisco. I'm frustrated with this or that. So I'm going to Austin. I'm going to Miami. Well, a lot of those people have come back, you know, which is great.
They have.
Okay. And I don't think the Giants don't subscribe to that. And maybe because we're kind of have a little bit of maybe call it Disney in us, where we're a happy place, right? The ballpark, and we want the ballpark to be, you know, serve everyone. But politically, we found that you can put yourself in a place where you can throw in, you know, that everybody can be embraced. And we had 11 out of 11 members of the Board of Supervisors endorse the ballpark measure. We had 11 out of 11 members of the Board of Supervisors endorse the Mission Rock Project, which went to a vote in 2015. And so I think it's doable. I think that you have to listen. And there are parts of the community that may not be natural allies to a business, but when they hear there's 40% affordable housing, or they hear you're going to build two public parks with, you know, open access, when they hear that you can come to a ball game and you have free bicycle check-in with the Bicycle Coalition, those are elements. I mean, how do you just have to work and think through it. The divisiveness, I think everybody has realized that the divisiveness is yesterday. We care deeply about San Francisco. We care, you know, there have been people recalled, there's been this and that. Now I think we're moving into more of a good mode where, you know, let's band together.
Willie Brown told me on this stage a few months ago that he couldn't be mayor now with the divisiveness, the Board of Supervisors, and the city commissions. You agree with that?
I think Willie could be mayor when he's 110 years old, which we may see, right? I don't necessarily agree with, that in the sense that, yes, there'll be constituencies that are going to be challenging. But again, I just look at some of the things that have gotten done around San Francisco in the post-pandemic era and some of the private public partnerships that are getting done. We're, take something that I went to as a kid that's in Golden Gate Park, played tennis on the public courts in Golden Gate Park. It's now the Doug and Lisa Goldman Tennis Center, right? And so it was a private party, the Goldman family and the city of San Francisco producing a beautiful tennis center open for everyone. Tennis and pickleball.
I was going to say pickleball.
Don't forget your pickleball.
Who's going to be the next mayor, or will London Breed be reelected? Where do the Giants, where does Advance SF jump into the politics here? Because this is a big 6 months coming up.
Fair question. Is a big 6 months coming up. The Giants actually are prohibited from taking a position on this, on the mayor's race, because we have a 75-year ground lease with the city of the Port of San Francisco on the ballpark, the same sort of long-term ground lease on the Mission Rock. So I can't write a $500 check. The Giants can't write a $500 check because we have, city business. And I don't know. I think it's going to be, we'll see who enters. There may be more entrants. I guess the deadline is June. And, and ranked choice voting has an impact. So we don't have a horse in the race. We know all the people. And I think actually everybody that's declared to run is, including the incumbent, are really well-intentioned and really love the city and really care about the city. So, we're kind of as an example of what we were talking about earlier. We feel like we could work with anybody.
It's London Breed, Asha Safai, Mark Farrell, and Daniel Lurie, and I believe Aaron Peskin will be jumping in soon. Will you have meetings with them just offsite and say, hey, regardless if you win or lose, what's your agenda and here's where we're coming from?
100%. I mean, not so. I mean, we've all four of the people you mentioned, and plus Aaron, we know well. We work with, trade ideas. I think that engagement, it's incumbent upon large businesses or any business in San Francisco to do that. There's going to be a budget deficits that we're going to face. I think that the voters have spoken that more taxes, business community or elsewhere, is not really the answer here. And I think everybody, we have a sympathetic ear from all the candidates on that topic. I also think we have a sympathetic ear, on what can private forces do to create more housing, to be in partnership. So, we don't view it as that divisive. And I think that everybody you mentioned, can come in and make make San Francisco, you know, a better place.
You talk about the ballpark, the new area you're talking about, Mission Rock. Can you just describe exactly where this is between Chase Center and Oracle?
Sure.
And what's are we going to have housing and parks? Is that already happening?
Yes. So I mean, it's super exciting. So if you come to the game, I saw the people that raise their hands on opening day. On opening day, if you walk over to the area that used to be Lot A parking, the closest in part of Lot A to the ballpark.
Which was my media parking for decades.
Yeah, well, we've still got a place for you for now. We'll ultimately be building a garage when we get to the next phase. Yeah, the garage will be, yeah, you're okay. You don't have to Uber to the ball game. We're going to have, so there's really four elements and we're really excited about. On opening day, we're actually opening a park, 7-acre park, China Basin Park, which is going to have access to the water. It's, there's bike areas, rollerblade areas, trails that will lead out. There's a lead out to the Bay Trail, but a really nice 7-acre park. You can have a picnic. You can see Giants home runs land in McCovey Cove. So the park is going to be a real highlight, and that opens in April 5th. Then already existing is a residential building called the Canyon. It's that red building if you look out from the ballpark. So that's an 18-story residential 40% housing building. We're really pleased with the design.
Open yet to people living?
Yeah, so that's open. So that's leasing. So that's about 60% leased. So the 40% affordable, and then the rest is market rate. But blended, it's 60% leased, and it's continuing to lease. Rental apartments, not condominiums, because it's a ground lease, and we have to do rentals. But the market's been good. We're right at where we expected to be. Then Visas, and this is a huge, obviously, economic engine of Mission Rock. Visa is opening its world headquarters in May. That white building that you see from behind the ballpark. Super excited. They've doubled down. We made this deal before the pandemic. They're doubling down on San Francisco. You'll see there's a sign, the blue Visa sign. That is on the building. We're super excited about that. Then there's two other buildings that are going to be opening later in the year. A green cylindrical building behind the Visa building that Jeannie Gang, one of the great architects in the world, designed. And then a white building behind the Canyon, which is another office building that's geared to life sciences. And we believe we'll have a company in there or companies in there. They'll be tied into to UCSF, life sciences, venture investing.
That's a lot happening there.
It's a lot going on. And then, so that's four, and then we're entitled to do eight more. So, and then if we do any more, we will build a garage for Raj Mathias Park.
You're right. And this is now creeping up toward Chase Center, correct? We're in that spot.
So when you think about it, I mean, it's interesting in today's world. We don't pretend to be real estate developers, but we've learned a lot. We entitled the property. Then in 2018, we became 50-50 partners with Tishman Speyer. So it's the two of us. And we talk a lot about this. If you think the old days, the shopping mall is not dead, but it's changed, right? And people want experiences and retail, et cetera. And I didn't talk about the retail, which I'll talk about in a second. But the way we see it with the ballpark here, 3.5 million people coming to the ballpark every year. Chase Center here, which is fantastic, and 2.5 million, let's say, come to Warriors games and concerts and events. Then everything in the middle, think about the old days of the shopping center. So you had Bloomingdale's here and Macy's here or Neiman Marcus, Nordstrom's. And then everything in the middle sort of takes advantage of those two anchors. So what you're talking about is 3.5 million people at the ballpark, 2.5 million at Chase. So that's 6 million people with foot traffic plus the residential plus the office. It's moving toward, a real hub of activity in a good way, planned out. I should have mentioned the retail. So coming later this year is we have a restaurant. This has been announced in the Visa building, Que Fico. I don't know if anybody's ever been to the – it's on Divisadero, and now there's a great one in Menlo Park in the new development on El Camino Real. Then we have some other great Arsenal a croissant? Anybody ever stood in a 45-minute line at Clement and Arguello for one of their croissants? They got voted best croissant in America. They're coming in. Just go on and on. We've got a great bar in the Mission, which is called Trick Dog, and he's coming in, Josh Harris, with something called Quick Dog. We have a fitness center. So we have about 10 retailers are going to be opening in the next 6 months.
We talk about all this development, which is great and exciting. What about just the ballpark itself? How do you keep Oracle Park relevant? The actual, not just the baseball product, because the demographics and dynamics have changed of our intake, right, of fans. We're not going there just to watch baseball. How do you keep that ballpark relevant?
It's a great question. So this is the 25th year of our new ballpark. Pretty crazy when you think about it. It just, I mean, blink your eyes and it's this year 25. Very important to do. I'll give you just one quick, reflection. So Peter McGowan and I, and our group, our owner group in 93, when we came in, that was our first year. We walked around Candlestick, and Candlestick at that point was 33 years old. It opened in 1960. Felt like it was 75 years old. Dodger Stadium opening about the same time, 30 years old, felt like it was 10 years old.
Yeah.
You know, it goes to, got to do the maintenance, got to do the repairs, some fan facing and some just behind the scenes, whether it's painting or cracks or, you know, reinforcing the guts, the plumbing of the building. So that's part of it. But then the other part of it is for the fans is, it's just new fan-facing attractions and upgrades, right? So this year, we're doing a bunch of things. Whole new lighting system, which, especially for night games, obviously, will be really interesting because lighting has become a thing. And it's become like a thing where you can get the fans excited about certain things. I don't want to give away some of the tricks they have in store, but I don't know if you've gone to, if you've seen a few ballparks that are doing something, and
I think the Mets do it pretty well. From what I saw,
Mets do it well. The Phillies, the Minnesota Twins, where let's say your closer comes into the game, lights go off, and then they blink, and then they come into a thing. So whatever, I'm not saying that's exactly what we're going to do, but there's ways you can do colored lighting. So so we have a whole new lighting program. We have a whole new sound system. Okay, which is upgraded. We have, those of you who are ever on the suite level, we have a whole new suite program. We have a whole new food and beverage concessionaire. You can see lots of new items. So basically, we took this quarter century anniversary of the Giants, 25 years of the ballpark, Oracle Park, Back Bell Park.
SBC.
Don't forget AT&T. But only two companies. Those were three incarnations of one company, and the great people at Oracle are with us.
How do you deal, not just the baseball part of it, but just the complaints, and there are always a bunch of them. You're going to get it in about a week from now. Oh, this lighting is terrible. I'm not going to a club. I want to go just watch a baseball game. Do you just politely say, well, you
no.
Because you're gonna get that.
I get it. Did anybody hear Dwayne Kuiper this morning or last night? I think he said on a telecast, I didn't hear it, but I think he was talking a little bit about Dodger Stadium, about the sound. Like it was so loud, whatever. And so I just want to be in peace and watch a baseball game. It's interesting. I think what we're trying to do is, again, cut as wide a swath as possible with our fans, just as we try to do politically. And so we get it. I used to go, so my dad would bring me to games when I was a kid. And then my dad, until he passed, we would go to weekday afternoon games when he was in his 70s and 80s. And the last thing he wanted to do was hear like loud rock music, you know, as batters were coming up or between innings or whatever. That's the last thing. He wanted to just talk to his son or, you know, enjoy a beautiful day in the sun. So we try to respect that, and certain days are not, they're not all created equal. Like a Wednesday afternoon in the middle of summer might be a more mellow environment. But there's a whole segment, and young fans are really important to us and any business, and then especially any sports business where you're creating fans for the future. There are young fans that would say come to a Friday night game that want it loud and want a vibe, and it's date night or it's, you know, a bunch of a group from you know, a company is coming over and there's, you know, 100 people and they're, you know, in a social environment. They want to feel it. So we're trying to respect all of that. But attracting the younger fan, the young fan, is very important to all sports, very important to baseball. And I think we took a big step last year in the shortening the game times, right? So that so literally 25 minutes was taken off 25 to 30 minutes. So what was 3 hours and 5 minutes became 2 hours and 35 minutes.
I want to ask about Rennell. This would have been her 25th year as your public address announcer. You are so image conscious for your brand and so brand aware, and I mean that as a compliment. Why not bring her back as a PA? And you got a lot of criticism, and you're still getting criticism.
Yeah. Look, Rennell's a beautiful person. We love Rennell. It's one of these things where she is. We're naming the booth after her. We're honoring her. She's a legend. And I can't really talk about it, unfortunately. But it's not so much not bringing her back. It's just we came to a mutual agreement that we put in the release that that we weren't going forward. And that's, you know, unfortunate. I mean, we would love to have her forever. But I think of her as somebody very much not unlike, you know, our great stars. Really tough shoes to fill. And I think, you know, witness to that or exhibit A to that is, you know, we don't have a replacement. We're going to have various people audition and, you know, take a while to hire a replacement. Love Rennell. She's been, you know, just part of the fabric of this community for a quarter century.
You've seen the reports that perhaps her politics don't jive with the Charles Johnson, the lead owner of the Giants. Is that something that is there truth there?
No, I mean, that has nothing to do with her not returning.
Getting a lot of criticism still.
I understand the fans' sentiments, and you know, I might feel similarly if I was a fan, but I also know, you know, when there's, you know, something that happens in a confidential environment, we can't talk about it.
Yeah. This is a tumultuous time across the Bay in Oakland. All teams, including the Giants, voted to approve the A's move to Las Vegas. Can baseball succeed there? And I guess the real question, can the A's succeed there?
You know, I think that's again, a tough one for us because we know the family well, the Fisher family. They were originally, you know, part of the group that helped save the Giants. And I think, you have a situation where you want all 30 teams to have the best shot of being successful. And I don't want to really comment on it more. I mean, there's lots of discussions now about, you know, where they're going to play the next several years. So that's an open question. I wish them well, whatever they do. I don't want to, it's not really, you know, for us to comment because it's a difficult position we're in here being, you know, sharing the market. And it's just publicly, we've tried to stay away from commenting on it.
Your leader, I see not just in San Francisco, but Bay Area wide. What can Oakland do? How can they rediscover and rebrand themselves after the Warriors, Raiders, and now perhaps the A's leaving?
Yeah, I mean,
a Cal guy. You spent time.
I'm a Cal guy. No, I love the East Bay, and I actually worked for the A's briefly at the very beginning with Charlie Finley of the beginning of my career. And, you know, look, there's a vibrant element of the East Bay, all parts of the East Bay, right? So the core, you know, Oakland, Hayward, Berkeley area, and then the area over in Contra Costa County and the Pleasanton. I mean, it's vibrant. It's growing, actually, if you take the East Bay as a whole. And so I think, you know, there's excitement around some plans. I think everything's kind of on hold to see, you know, where it all goes with the A's. So, you know, maybe they'll be playing in Oakland for several more years. I don't know. But I think that, you know, all the teams, the Warriors, the 49ers, us, feel like that we need to and do and will continue to embrace the East Bay as a big part of who we are. I know some of the plans, you know, for instance, I'm on the board. There's a Barry Host Committee. I think you're familiar with it. you know, so when you look at events like the World Cup, let's say, or the NBA All-Star Game, I think the Warriors have done a good job at this. You know, where the game itself, the All-Star Game of the World Cup, may not be in the East Bay, there are going to be activities in the East Bay, you know, that will help promote it. And I know the WNBA team is going to have a practice facility in Oakland. So it's important for us to embrace the East Bay, and there's a lot to embrace.
Back here in San Francisco, when we talk in 5 years from now, what do you envision the city is going to be? And not just all rosy. Tell me some of the problems that you see and what's going to go well here.
I think that the big challenge is to get that, to retain and grow the middle class. I think that's a challenge because there is a lot of demand in San Francisco for, you know, technology company employees to live here. And that's so I think one of the challenges is retaining that middle class. I do think that the business environment is going to be strong in San Francisco. I think AI and technology, and I think we've learned, it all starts here, kind of highlighted this over the years, is there have been ups and downs. There's been slumps, but San Francisco usually rebounds really strongly, and it rebounds, you know, kind of on the cusp of innovation. And, you know, I think we're in the, to use a baseball analogy, the first, second inning of AI, right? We're going to we'll figure out, you know, where it goes, how it gets regulated, if it does get regulated, what companies emerge. And so I think the business community is going to be super strong. I think there's going to be demand for San Francisco. So, to be here, to locate here, to live here, the big issue, again, that we're trying to tackle, that I think is, if you want to look the not just rosy, is to retain the middle class in the city or in areas close into the city, right? So that includes Daly City, and that includes South San Francisco, and that includes, you know, parts of the close-in East Bay, and, you know, to retain, you know, a middle class, so we can have a, you know, a vibrant, diversified workforce in our city.
For the younger people in the audience or online listening and watching, they might not know that the Dianne Feinstein era as mayor here, these were tough times in San Francisco. Are there similarities now, and have we can come out of it from that point?
I think so. I mean, it was really interesting you mentioned Dianne, because I think about her a lot. She was kind of like almost like a forever mayor, right? Because she, even when she was in the Senate and had, you know, the senior most member of the Senate, she would call and she would say, hey, you know what? What about, you know, are they, I remember her asking about the units at Mission Rock, is that, you know, do they need to be larger, you know, and more family accommodating, more of a mix? I mean, she was really into it. And so if you go back to Dianne, who, by the way, carried the first ballpark measure to build the ballpark that failed, Proposition W in 1987, crazily. But if you go back to that period, obviously she became mayor in like one of the, you know, all-time most tragic moments in San Francisco, in the assassination of George Moscone. And, you know, she would ride the police car and she was worried about violence. So, you know, to the extent we've had issues with crime in San Francisco, or property crime more so perhaps, you know, that was happening, and there was more, it was physical, more, you know, homicides back in her era.
And no social media at that point. So we didn't know about it right away every day.
Right. And that's been a big factor. So, but if you go back to her situation, you know, there were limits on heights, and they were worried about the city, and then, you know, and the future of the city. And then it got into a boom, you know, shortly after that period. So it's there's cycles in San Francisco. Keep in mind, 49 square miles, small height limits in the whole northern part of San Francisco. I think there's going to be there's huge demand. We just have to make it affordable.
Sure. Let me know some questions, too, whether it's online and from the audience, please. I would love you to contribute. Who's someone you learned from to this day, Larry?
Well, I mean, the first person that comes to mind immediately was Peter McGowan, who's my partner. So he was my boss, right? We came in 93. And Peter, I'll never forget, there were two things about Peter that have always stuck with me, just on the business, talking about learning from. The first part was he had a he had obviously the love and passion for the Giants and for the business, and he was no constituency could be too small. So there was a person from New Jersey that would write him all the time about the Giants. Kurt Manwaring is your catcher again? And oh my goodness. And you know, why you traded Matt Williams? Good topic, since Matt's back in Giants uniform this year. You traded Matt Williams, you guys are idiots. Da, 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 da. And Peter would like literally respond. And in those days, handwrite a note back to them, to that person. And that person wasn't a sponsor. That person wasn't buying tickets. He lived in New Jersey. But he was a Giant, but he was a Giants fan. So just the way you treat people that are part of your world, I learned a lot that first thing. And the second thing, on like the day-to-day business, Peter used to have a motto, and I think he got it at Safeway, where when he came from CEO of Safeway to the Giants,
yeah.
He basically was focused on moving forward, innovating and moving things forward. And he said, look, I'd much rather make 100 decisions a week and get them 87% right than make 5 decisions a week and get it 100% right. Meaning, let's keep going, take risks, you know, experiment, do things, try things. And I learned a lot from that. And that's it. And that's kind of when you think about it, if you're running Safeway, you're doing that, right? Yeah. You get a report card every day, right? The meat's fresh, the produce is fresh, the lines are long. And that's what we try to do with the Giants. Giants and Safeway may think like they're totally different, but they're not that different.
It's really interesting.
We get a report card every day. Eight to three last night? What the heck? You went 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position? Jeez, come on. Let's go. How about a different report card tonight?
That would be nice. We've got some great questions here from the audience. Among them, I was thinking about this as well. Larry, what are your thoughts regarding converting the SF Center Mall, the San Francisco Center, into the home of the Bay FC, which is the women's soccer team, which is currently playing at PayPal Park in San Jose? What advice would you give Bay FC's owners in building a complex in San Francisco? And Mayor Breed has brought that up, building a soccer stadium where the Nordstrom, I believe, is.
Right. So that's a great question, and it's been out there. I think... first of all, it would be great for San Francisco if that could happen, right? So it would create all sorts of energy. And I do think that we have to rethink parts of downtown, whether it's the office corridor, say Montgomery and California Street, or it's the shopping areas, which would be Union Square, or the areas along Market Street that you're referencing. Now, whether the stadium itself would work there, I don't know. I don't know. It could. I would love for Bay FC, and again, I want to, our friends in San Jose, you know, don't want to dismiss them being in San Jose, but, you know, maybe there's some San Francisco response. So I think that, you know, possibly there are some other areas in San Francisco where it could work as well. I mean, one of the things we looked at going into the center city with a ballpark, I mean, it's tough. The access is tough. It's possible, though, because I guess they're not, I don't know how many, what their capacity would be, more in the 20,000 range, not the 40,000 range. So, but you might want to expand. So I think there's some other areas in San Francisco that could, and I would love to see them be at least part of San Francisco, maybe part of, they're called Bay FC. So it doesn't mean they leave San Jose completely. And maybe there's a practice facility. I mean, I think there's a lot of options. We know a lot of people at that franchise, and I think they've been expertly run to date and presented to the community. They had their opener 3 days ago. Great. I wasn't there, but heard fantastic reviews. So they've kind of done everything right so far.
I'm just thinking now that you said that, perhaps is there a scenario that they would play one or two games in San Francisco, maybe at Oracle Park?
Yeah.
Is that even viable?
Yes, absolutely. We'd love to. And so it's just all a scheduling thing. So we can just, because we've done soccer there and it's been fantastic. Or football, if we want to call it, Bay FC Football Club. And yes, I think that's a resounding yes. So it's just fitting in the schedule. So this year, probably, it's all the schedules are out, but going into future years, would love maybe they play some of their bigger games at Oracle Park.
You talk about expanding in San Francisco. There's other spots, whether it's for BayFC or other business ventures or real estate ventures. 25 years ago, I barely heard of China Basin. There's India Basin down near Hunters Point, right?
Right.
Is that a spot, perhaps?
I mean, I don't want to, things, words in their mouth, but anything kind of along, if you look at the pier, so San Francisco, on the waterfront used to be a maritime driven waterfront, right? Now it is really recreation and activation, and whether it's tourists or people that live here, it's used in a different way. So I think the way I would answer it, because I don't want to be specific on any one site, because I don't know what they're thinking, but I think anything up and down the waterfront would be fantastic. It's worked well for us.
Question from the audience. Larry, regional broadcasting networks, like what you watch, the Giants or Warriors or Sharks on, are struggling across the country, impacting many pro sports franchises. What's the status with the Giants and their local network, and I will ask as an NBC, just full disclosure.
Full disclosure. Won't have a Ronna McDaniel moment, right?
Exactly.
There's like three bits of good news, I think, that relate to the Giants RSN, Regional Sports Network. And having said that, and I'll get to those three things, we're not exempt from the changing patterns, right? Whether it's a combination of cord cutting, and the younger audiences are cord nevers, right? So our children who are in their 20s, they watch television on their lap. They take out their laptop and they watch. Now, you can do that in authenticated streaming on the Giants Regional Sports Network. So if you're a subscriber in some other way, you get it in a streaming format. But the three good pieces of information for Giants fans are, number one, our partner's NBC. Couldn't have a better partner. Couldn't have a stronger partner. I'm not saying that
even because I'm sitting on stage.
Not because your paycheck says NBC, but there are others that we know about that are just aren't strong companies. And NBC Comcast is a very strong company, one of the really, top one or two media companies in the world right now. So that's the first benefit. The second benefit is where we coexist with the Warriors on our regional sports network. So it's a two-team network, and it's year-round programming, and the Warriors are a great product. So all of that is a benefit. And the third is we're in the middle of a long-term deal. It's not up in a year or two. So we've got close to a decade to go on the deal. So with all of that, our RSN isn't, in the short term evaporating, and we're not going to be in the kind of situation that some of the teams are in. Having said that, there are industry solutions out there that probably will happen, in the medium term, let's say, where maybe it looks a little bit more like a football structure, but that'll all be done by Major League Baseball. That's not a Giants problem.
And you're referring to maybe different networks carrying baseball games.
Like yeah.
Right now it's Apple and NBC.
Or centralized. There's now MLB Media, and the three teams are with MLB Media. So the games are being produced by MLB. They don't have a local RSN. It's the Rockies, the Padres, and the Diamondbacks. Three teams in our division. But it's going, I think we may morph, and this has been out there, the commissioner's talked about this, we may morph into a more centralized situation where there's other issues with blackouts, and there's issues with, the declining subscriber base if you have the old format, which, may not be around for, the balance of this decade.
Another good question from the audience. Why are so many businesses around Oracle Park closed? Breweries, wine shops. Is it impacting attendance?
I think
it's a two-part question.
Yeah, right. So, the short answer is the reduction of people downtown has impacted attendance. This is our 25th year of the ballpark. 16 of the 24 years that we've played have been complete sellouts. 2000 through 2007 and 2010 through 2017 when we won championships in the first 8 years. So 60 of the 24 years. In those years, we've had, you know, a number of people downtown Monday through Friday was much different than it is now. It's starting to come back. And so what's happened is retailers have felt the pinch too. So businesses, retailers, but that's starting to come back too. And we've found some new neighbors that are, you know, people that are opening businesses, restaurants, cafes now. So I think we're, you know, if you kind of chart it out this way, I think we're kind of in this period. We need to get to here, but we're in, and somebody's listening on radio, I'm making kind of a U shape with my hands. I think we're out of the trough and we're, you know, we're have another, you know, 20 or 30% to get back to where we were previously.
Even if people are here, and I think I can speak for almost everyone in this room, the prices of everything have just gone up, whether it's Safeway, baseball, buying a car or anything. From the audience here, Larry, how are the Giants working to keep baseball affordable and accessible? Cost is so important for people keeping people from visiting San Francisco. Even parking, $20 to $40.
Right. So the way we look at it, and we just really emphasize this to our fans, and it doesn't always get absorbed and understood, because you can go, let's say I'm looking at this game, it's a Sunday against the Dodgers, and wow, the cheapest ticket is $60, let's say, whatever. So we're sensitive to that. But the good news in baseball, we have 81 games. So let's just take next week. If you shop and you're somewhat selective, and it may not be the Sunday against the Dodgers, I mean, we have games, there are games next week that are $10, $12 tickets, right? And we even had an offer during spring training where $10 for a ticket and a beer. How about that? we're actually proud that we are the most affordable sport of the big four in this country, but you have to shop a little bit. Online allows you to do that. And so I would challenge anybody listening or in our audience here to say, you know, let's say next Tuesday night, April 9th, tickets, Giants and Nationals. I bet you'll get change back from your 20.
Wow.
Or maybe change back from your $15 bill.
Couple more questions before we wrap it up, and we appreciate your time. By the way, where are you going after this this interview?
I'm headed south. I figure that, you know, somehow, you know, I promise I won't be signaling Bob Melvin from my seats, but like to be there. And it's the Giant Dodger rivalry is so much fun. We have them in town in early May. And it's weird this year because you have balanced schedule. So we don't play them 19, 20 times. We play them 14 times.
Yeah.
But we don't play them after like July 20th.
August, September?
No.
Wow.
That's the way the schedule falls. So you know, all the Giant Dodger games are important games. So we'll be down there screaming and yelling.
All right, a couple more questions to the audience before we wrap it up. But what's being done, Larry, to include and encourage city residents to participate in the recovery? That's a good question. We talk about the Benioffs and the big multi-million-dollar companies,
here, right?
But what about just the regular people? How do they participate in this recovery?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, one of the things we're doing with our housing is like on the canyon. In the canyon, is we do have preferential treatment for city residents. So in other words, if you apply for the affordable housing, which again is people that are, you know, they're making good incomes, but it's just an affordability squeeze, there's preferential treatment for city residents, which I know wasn't exactly the question. I think with Advance SF, what we're trying to do is really focus the employers, the largest employers, to give preferential treatment to city residents in their employment patterns. So that's one thing we're trying to do is, there's a lot of that happening with benefits to city residents for, let's say, Park and Rec. Yeah. You can go out and play Harding Park for 50% of what you would play, you know, a public golf course if you don't live in the city. We work heavily with Muni to get people to and from the ball games with breaks and benefits. So, I mean, city residents, honestly, have been really engaged by and large. I mentioned Advance SF, but there are like 9 or 10 different groups that, and some of them are more focused on the grassroots.
Right? Yeah, there are.
Because we're more of a business group, Advance SF, but Together SF, Michael Moritz's group, Neighbors for SF, Abundant SF, Grow SF, I keep going.
Yeah, there are a bunch. On the news on a nightly basis, and this is not Fox News, this is the regular local channels here, we run stories of business owners, small business owners, just fed up because they're getting broken into every week, sometimes multiple times a week. How do you keep them engaged and say, you know what, things are going to get better? You're very optimistic. Yep. How do you sell that optimism to them when every week they're getting broken into?
I think there's definitely budgetary and structural change that needs to happen. And I think the start was this last ballot measures, the set of ballot measures, the March election, where the mayor put on the ballot, I think it was Proposition E.
E, correct.
So
yeah.
Additional resources for the police. That really was focused on what you're talking about. So it's not going to happen overnight, but I think there definitely will be that combined with a raise for the police officers to help with recruitment. We have to beef up the police force just in terms of numbers and which will make responsiveness to those crimes and deterrent, realistic, because there was, as the police staffing levels were lower, there weren't a lot of deterrents people would be enforced, they would be apprehended, and that the police were focused on the bigger crimes, but the property crimes they chip away at a city. And so I think we're on the way to that. We need and reform in just the way, the police departments are refunded.
So disheartening. These are middle class families, the ones that you want to retain here.
Right. I mean, and the other thing I think, which is not the crime part of it, but has been difficult, is the bureaucracy. Right. So if you want to get a permit to expand your business, or you just want to get a permit to open your business, it's a long and arduous process. And the mayor has been super focused on that. I mean, we've got to streamline, the bureaucracy here in terms of zoning and planning and approvals and everything. Because you say, if it takes me, 2 years in San Francisco to go from beginning to end and 4 months somewhere else, I'll go to somewhere else.
Serious question here. Would you ever consider running for mayor? Not this time around.
Willie Brown once did say to me, when somebody asked me that question in front of him, he elbowed the person and say, "Man, are you kidding? You got a better job." We've got a lot of work to do with the Giants to get the Mission Rock built and to get we got 3 rings, but I've got 10 fingers. So that's my focus.
Is he evading the question? You want to answer it?
Oh, that's I've got 7 after 7 more rigs, we'll think about it.
Final question to you, and we appreciate your time. Final question, because it's lunchtime now. Best thing that you order at the ballpark? What's your favorite ballpark meal?
That's a great question. I'm gonna have to say the crab sandwich.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's crazy crab sandwich. And what's really great about it, I gotta say, is that for whatever reason, we're able, even in not in crab season. So if you grow up, I remember like my dad would come home sometimes like on a Sunday and go to the Fisherman's Wharf and bring back the fresh Dungeness crab because he'd say it's crab season and we got to do it. So that's in what's crab season, something like February through for 4 months, 3 months, something like that. Right now, I think is crab season.
It is.
But what I'm proud of is somehow, some way, the crab sandwich is still outside of crab season. It's good. It's so it's a September. It's in September, and you know, playoff time. You can still get your crab sandwich. So yeah, so I'm a crab sandwich person.
With that said, Larry, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for all your support.
Good luck this season. Have a safe flight down to L.A. and bring home a victory. For everyone online and in the audience, thanks for being here. If you'd like to support the Commonwealth Club, please visit our website, commonwealthclub.org. We hope you make it again soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Les.
You've been listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Hear thousands of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you like what you've heard, please consider supporting our work and help us bring 500 programs a year to listeners like you. Go to commonwealthclub.org/donate. Think your way around the world with our travel programs to exciting domestic and international destinations. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live at our events. Thank you for listening and for your support.